Hi, and welcome to Feeling Healthy with Dr. Scott Lear. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Lear. I'm a health scientist at Simon Fraser University, as well as an avid exerciser, blogger, father, and heart patient. Each episode, I interview a leading health expert to break down science into simple steps to help you live a long, happy, and healthy life. So sit back and enjoy the show. On today's podcast, I'm joined by Anne Guzman for a discussion on exercise and bone health. Anne is a kinesiology graduate with vast experience in the health benefits of exercise. She is a professional bike racer and has over a decade of experience in healthcare as a personal trainer, medical rep for the pharmaceutical industry, and runs her own sports nutrition and performance coaching business. She has her BoneFit certification from Osteoporosis Canada and is a lifelong learner currently doing her master's in science on bone health in cyclists. Thank you, Anne, for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always great to meet people that you originally meet virtually and then, oh, it's still virtual, but at least we're seeing each other and talking to each other. So it's really great to meet you and thanks for having me on.
So the first thing I wanted to ask, so you've had quite a wide variety of experience in the real world, which probably gives you such a deep perspective on this topic of bone health and exercise. What was it that got you interested in this area and to pursue your master's?
To be honest, I'm one of those people that's interested in all aspects of physiology, so that I landed on bone wasn't necessarily intentional. What I was interested in was, you know, I do a lot of work with athletes. I was an athlete. I was in pharma. So I was kind of interested in coming back into the other side. And since I was always reading research just to keep up with my own education and learning, eventually I wanted to be in the research side and see, well, what's it like to actually do the research? So I have a better perspective on this. And who knows, maybe I'll fall in love with that, or maybe I won't. And so in the search for a supervisor in a school to do a master's in kinesiology and health sciences, I eventually met Dr. Nota Klentru, and her area of specialty is pediatric physiology and bone health. So after talking, and she was very open to me presenting some ideas that her and I could decide on together and creating my own project. So I ended up, I guess, focused on bone based on the supervisor. And then I'm also very interested in bone because I've spent a lot of time in the sport of cycling, and there's a lot of associations of poor bone health with cyclists. And I was very interested in looking further into that. And in particular, my interest was tweaked by a tweet by Dr. Craig Sale 2 years ago. Twitter, I tell you, there's value in Twitter, because this piqued my interest and I haven't let go of this topic, where he shared something about how bone might get desensitized to continuous cycles of stimulation. So we can talk a bit more about that later on today, but that really piqued my interest. It was in animal studies, and I started reading all of that. And I kind of presented that to NOTA as something I wanted to investigate in humans, and in particular in relation with cycling. And so that's kind of the, you know, in a nutshell, how I ended up where I am today. And now we have, we're working on a thesis related to cycling and bone health.
I have seen pictures of you recently in the lab on Twitter. So what type of research question are you asking or working on?
We're particularly investigating the effect of duration of cycling on bone health. So I guess just briefly, like in animals, there's a lot of research to show that, you know, the impact on bone has almost like a threshold where more is not better. Right. So if you jump, I'm just going to throw out some numbers as a rat or a mouse, if you jump up 30 times, jumping 100 times doesn't necessarily give more of a bone formation or osteogenic effect. So there seems to be this threshold where more is not creating more of a bone forming effect, just to put that simply. So I'm really curious if this phenomenon of bone desensitization occurs in humans. And so what we're doing is comparing different durations of like short, medium, long durations within the same participant doing all the visits to see is there a response to the bone, because it's not high intensity, it's around 60 to 70%. And if there's a response, does the response, is there a different response as time increases between different visits? And if there isn't, like, is there a different response due to, let's say, the fatigue factor? So because of maybe inflammatory markers that show up after 2 hours on the bike versus 30 minutes or other markers that we might be measuring. So there's two aspects that we're looking at. It's that threshold of, you know, is there a threshold of time where more isn't more effective as far as markers of bone formation? And then also, are there other factors that could contribute to bone resorption or formation based on extended durations of time on the bike?
It could be like too much of a good thing, maybe not so good.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, there's certainly research that suggests that, you know, low intensity, long duration exercise is not, you know, that's not the necessarily the ideal choice for promoting optimal bone health. But then there's, yeah, I mean, you look at cyclists, endurance runners, endurance swimmers, like there's certainly observational data to show that they have lower, they can have lower bone mineral density than counterparts playing soccer or doing martial arts or something more high impact and intermittent. So it's kind of investigating that further and more so looking at maybe is there a mechanical aspect to cycling versus the conditions that surround the sport? Because we know that a lot of cyclists maybe don't eat enough. They're obviously not doing a weight-bearing sport. Oftentimes they're underweight. So there's a lot of factors around the sport that could contribute to the low bone mineral density that we see. But I'm really curious about, well, is there a mechanical aspect, you know, more specific to the bone and, you know, duration or pauses that are not in cycling because it's so cyclical? I guess it's a little particular of an interest, but I'm really curious to see what we see in animals. Does that translate into humans?
I can imagine it being extremely helpful as well, because we benefit from that knowledge and how it applies to what recommendations we might make to the general population in terms of exercise and in terms of bone health. Whether it's kind of like you mentioned, weight-bearing or something like swimming, that's not weight-bearing. When you talk about bone health, now I know there's probably no real black or white kind of definition. It's like we'll throw around the term heart health, but I'd be hard-pressed to kind of come up with a real definition. What are the concerns that may be brought on if somebody's bone isn't ideally healthy?
Yeah, so I guess, like the first part, like when we talk about bone health, we're talking about bone mineral density and strength. The thing with bones is we don't feel them, right? Until you break something. So osteoporosis is often called the silent thief, because you might be getting more porous bones, but you don't know until you know, because you're clinically tested with a DEXA scan. It's the increased risk of getting a fracture that really is what becomes problematic as your bone mineral density decreases. But again, it's not, you know, you mentioned bone health. Bone health is a lot more than just bone mineral density, but that's the clinical marker that we have, right? And there are other newer tests now, but that's the gold standard. But there's also, you know, there are in Canada, there are several tests for fracture risk assessment that physicians use. So the FRAC test and the CAROC test. So there's a lot of other factors, right? When you're looking at bone, yeah, you might have a bone mineral density scan that maybe falls in, you know, osteopenia or osteoporosis or normal, but, you know, do you have a lot of other risk factors or do you not? Like, do you smoke? Do you drink? Do you have low body weight? Genetics is a big factor. So it's this really multifactorial thing. Like, how is your nutrition? Do you eat enough? Like, do you have enough calcium? Do you have enough vitamin D? So I kind of just picture bone and then like all these little factors all the way around it that, you know, you might get a bone mineral density score, but then a physician's also going to look at all of those other factors. And then, okay, are you at high risk or are you at lower risk? And what's your 10-year fracture risk rate? But really, once you are diagnosed with low bone mineral density and you are, let's say, at higher risk for fracture, I mean, there are so many things you can do, right? I think for sure exercise and nutrition and different types of exercise and making sure that also you're working with someone who's familiar with, I guess, creating an exercise routine that doesn't put you at further risk, right? So if you did have osteoporosis, like, you don't want to be in forward flexion and twisting with a heavy medicine ball, right? Because those are riskier positions. But yeah, coming back to, I guess, the question of bone health and what are the risk really is fracturing. And of course, if you were to break a hip or something and you were a lot older, for example, I mean, that's a really large risk because now you could be immobile and that can lead to secondary negative outcomes from just the immobility itself. And the risk of fracturing again also becomes higher. So you're looking at fracture prevention. And so that comes with strength, right? If you have more muscle and you have better balance, like all of these things are so important for fall prevention. Like a lot of programs are falls prevention programs. So working on balance, working on strength and progressing from where you are, right? Everyone's gonna start somewhere different. So progressing from where you are to somewhere, you know, maybe you get to heavy weightlifting, but I think a lot of times we see, oh, you have to lift really heavy if you're trying to improve your bones, but you're not just going to start doing a plyometrics program if you're not even exercising, right? So it's about finding where you are in a continuum. Yeah. And making sure that you get your body used to one stage and then moving through continuums. And even for balance, right? If you've never worked on balance, you just start with two wide feet, a nice solid platform, and then you bring your feet together and then you can stagger your feet front and back. And all of these things while having supports around you. You could, I like to put people in a corner. So when you're in a corner of a room, you have the walls on each side of you and then you have something in front of you. So if you get to the point next where now you're going to lift a foot, right? You might tip to the right or the left, but the walls are there to catch you. So it's a safe environment as you progress through balances. And then even you're changing your surface. Maybe you start back and now you're on like foam and then next you're on a Bosu ball. So all these cool things you can do with very little equipment and no equipment at home to work on balance. And then of course, strength, right? So strengthening your bones and then also just having strength, period, which can help with your balance. So generally, if you're muscular and stronger, you're probably going to have better balance because you're always working your body in many different ways. But
now you also touched on osteoporosis a bit. And I've heard some people say that like it happens later in life, but you really kind of set the foundations to some extent younger in life, like a teenager. And can you comment on like the connection as a child and what might happen later on?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually in Canada defined as a pediatric disease with its consequences in adulthood. And really the reason for that is that when we are young is when we have an opportunity to maximize our bone mineral density. So it's so important what we're doing as kids and into young adulthood, you know, probably for females reaching peak bone mass early 20s and males a little bit later, but either way, like before you're 30, you're going to reach your peak bone mass. And there's some evidence to show that what you do in the peak bone mass that you have when you're young, you're holding on to it, right? Through your middle ages and then in adulthood. And really it's all about, so there's bone remodeling with formation and resorption. It's all about that balance. So when you're young, the scale is tipping towards more bone formation. And then, you know, 30 on, and there's no exact numbers here, but you're in that balance and maintaining. And then in particular, even though osteoporosis does definitely affect men and women, but women after menopause, you know, the bone mineral density dips off more so than men. So you're trying to maximize your bone when you're young, so you have more to hold on to. And then when you're older, hopefully that can reduce your risk. And of course, during all that time, you're still doing everything you can to maintain your bone health, right? So you're doing resistance training, you're eating a nourishing diet, you're consuming vitamin D and getting sunlight and calcium and all of these things that are part of a wholesome diet from foods. But yeah, it is important what we do in our youth. And, you know, I think it's so important now with all of our devices and video games that we get kids out moving and running and hiking and playing soccer and all those things that, you know, are normally intermittent high impact sports that kids love to do. Kids love intermittent activity, right? They tend to sprint and stop and sprint and stop. Not many, you know, young kids are going out for 20 mile runs or anything. But it's natural and innate for kids to move that way. It's just a matter of making sure they get out and do it, right? As opposed to sitting a lot. So it does matter what we do when we're young. And of course, that doesn't mean that it doesn't matter what we do when we're older, but I think it's important to focus on youth and maximizing that time to get that peak bone accrual.
That's really good to know. And also, I will make sure that my teenage kids listen to this podcast so they can hear it from somebody else besides me harping on them about being active.
It's a really difficult thing to think about. I'm not going to lie. Like, I did not think about this when I was 20. Now, I also, even though I took kinesiology and I learned about the skeleton, you're right that, you know, it's just not something that we naturally are pulled to think about, because when you go to the gym, you're lifting weights, you see changes in muscle, you see changes in body composition, you feel changes in strength and power. But there's no feedback with your bones. And so that's why I think, you know, I remember someone said to me, bones are so boring. Like, why do you want to research bones? And to me, it's like, well, actually, it's really important because it can significantly impact the quality of your life. You don't have to be old either, right? Everyone's got this visualization of osteoporosis as this hunched old woman with, you know, a walker, but that's not true. I know 40-year-olds with osteoporosis, 45-year-olds. I know 20-year-olds with very low bone mineral density. So it's, you know, it's difficult to make the connection. With athletes, it can be a little easier if you connect it to performance, right? Like, if you crash, you have a highly likelihood of breaking a bone, and a bone takes a long time to heal and you'll be out of your sport. But even still, it's hard, right? Because they're just so fixated on, I want to race, or I want, but you're right. It's, you know, when you mentioned I'm going to show this to my kids, I just thought, yeah, I mean, it's really an education thing, but it is a difficult topic to have people care about, because, you know, I see comments sometimes, why do I care about my bones? Like, I'm much more concerned about heart health and depression and all these other things, which are of course also very important. But if you break a hip and you can't exercise all of a sudden, well, you're probably going to have some other health problems because of that too, right? So it can lead to many of those other things that you're concerned about if suddenly you're immobile. So yeah, I think it's a tough sell, but I'm committed to to adding to it.
Well, the good thing is that if somebody is working and keeping their bone health and their bone density up, they're also helping a bunch of other things, like the heart health you mentioned, preventing or helping to manage stress and depression as well. So it's not just an either or, but it's kind of like, you know, here are the benefits, and bone health is one of them. But I do find it kind of intriguing, as you have that window of opportunity. But as you alluded to earlier, it doesn't mean that that's the only opportunity. So for people who might be in their 60s or something, maybe they weren't active as children, is there stuff that they can do now that would still help them out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, as you're saying, I think we shouldn't just separate bone health from overall wellness and, you know, mobility and function. So, but as far as bone health goes, absolutely, you can start lifting weights under, you know, proper guidance. And definitely I would take the time to source someone out who If you do have a diagnosis of osteoporosis, definitely source someone out that's familiar with weight training if you have osteoporosis. And you mentioned in the introduction, so Osteoporosis Canada has bone fit trainers all over the country who are familiar with maybe intricacies of what not to do to prevent fractures. But a lot of people don't get a bone mineral density scan. So most people don't know their bone mineral density, even though you can get one when you're 60, 65. You know, a lot of people don't get one until they break a bone. So regardless of your age, I would say yes, like you should be doing resistance training. And again, I mentioned earlier, definitely you don't want to just run out and start lifting heavy weights, but you know, evidence does suggest that heavier weights are more efficacious for promoting bone health than something maybe light aerobic and long in duration. So, you know, there's no specific number of repetitions, but the point is that, you know, maybe it's 5 to 12 and it's in that range, but that it's heavy. And when you get to the last 10, 11, 12, you can't do a 13th. So you do want that strain and that load on the bone, and same with high impact on the bone. So that, you know, when you're doing weights, you have the muscle pulling on the bone. So that's one way to promote bone health and bone formation. And now, of course, taking into consideration all of those other factors, right? You're eating well, you're not smoking, you're drinking, all these things that are gonna support that. And then there's the high impact, right? So if you're doing a sport, maybe if your joints are prepared to do high impact, so if you can do some soccer, or even if you just do some jumping, but again, you don't wanna just start jumping if you can't even do calf raises or, you know, weights. So you want to build up into that. But I would say that just jumping is probably really effective. So even if you were at home and you did some jumping, this doesn't take long, you could do that easily in the morning. If you have good shoulder mobility, overhead lifting, and again, having a qualified trainer, exercise physiologist, look at your form, because what you don't want to do is be in a hunched, rounded position and then do overhead presses. So making sure that you have proper form, but then that's good. You're bringing, you know, load down through your spine, right? And then doing deadlifts or doing squats, and it doesn't have to be the bar on your back, right? You can do squats with dumbbells in your hands. And if you're just starting and you've never done weights, maybe you're just coming up and off a chair, right? And a lot of this is just functionality. So it really depends where you're starting from. You know, are you loading this or not? But thinking about the parts of your skeleton that you want to load, right? So if you're loading down through your spine. So for example, if you're on a bike, your spine is prone and floating, right? So it's literally, it's not getting any weight bearing. So, okay, what do I want to do when I'm not riding? I want to put some load down through my spine, through my lumbar spine, through my my hips, right? So maybe I do some jumping, I do some lateral lunges. And there's something to be said for multi-directional movement as well. So I would keep that in mind. One of the exercises we learned in Bone Fit was literally just putting two broomsticks as a T on the floor so that you have four squares. And then you start, you know, again, depending where you're starting from, maybe you just start by walking from, you know, to each square. And then maybe as you progress, you start, you know, going a little faster. Maybe you start hopping from one square to another. So now you have to elevate to go over the broomsticks, right? So it's different than putting tape. Maybe you start with tape. And that's a simple exercise that allows you to work on your balance. But again, I wouldn't start there if you've never done anything to do with balance, right? The last thing we want is to promote fractures, right? So first you have to have balance. You have to know that what your capabilities are, and then you can progress through things like that. Maybe you do end up doing some hopping or jumping at home that also incorporates some balance. But I think the key is that anyone can start. It's never too late to start doing resistance training. You don't need a lot of equipment. You know, if you've never done push-ups can be really hard. So maybe there's a progression. You start on the wall. You get to the floor, you're on your knees, you're on a chair, and then eventually you're on the floor. There's always those progressions that are putting strain. And I like to think of push, a pull exercise, you know, and then overhead if you have the functionality in your shoulders, and then squatting. There's so much potential. I love the Osteoporosis Canada site. There's a lot of videos on there. And there's some great videos for posture as well. So that's a little bit different than necessarily loading the bone. But if you think about the posture that we tend to stereotype with osteoporosis, like the really hunched upper body, you know, that's a little different than, you know, the seated row machine at the gym. If you sit at that and then you just row, well, it's one thing to bring, you know, to work your rhomboids between your shoulder blades, but if you're still hunched, now you've worked your rhomboids hunched, right? So you're not really working those erector muscles up the side of your spine that are helping your posture. So that's very important because you don't want that kyphosis and then you can get like a fracture in the spine. So working on your posture, and that includes like opening and stretching your chest. And I would say during COVID, like we probably all sat a lot more. So to get some TheraBands and just work on some of these, I show some of my clients, we'll just go on Zoom and I'll just show them these simple exercises to work on your erector muscles. And it's not heavy stuff. So that's a little bit different. It's almost like a secondary way to support your skeleton by improving posture. So because of the posture, now you're in a better position to do some exercises where you can load your skeleton.
It's good that you touched on starting points, because some people, when they hear resistance training, heavy weights, they're thinking, oh, do I have to go to a gym where everybody's wearing tank tops and grunting and moaning? But you're talking in relation to the person's strength. So for some people, like you said, it might be getting up from a chair and doing squats up and down on that chair. Whereas somebody else who's has a bit more balance, but more strength, it might be doing squats, maybe holding dumbbells in their hand as they're doing squats. So a lot of these things that you've mentioned, people can actually do at home.
But yeah, I mean, you have to start where you are and work up to that heavy lifting and safely, assuming that, you know, you have the proper technique, right? So start with a broomstick. If you're doing, you're going to try an overhead lift and you do have the mobility, like start there. You can lift stuff around your house. Like there's a lot of things you can just lift at home, right? You don't have to go to the gym. I know it can be super intimidating. Not a lot of people are going to the gym with COVID now anyway. So there's certainly a lot of things we can do at home.
Yeah, we were filling milk jugs. So we get the 4-liter milk jugs, and after they're done, putting water in them, or cans of soup can work for some people depending on their strength. And
yeah,
bags of apples and potatoes and stuff like that can easily get up to 10, 15 pounds as well.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I think that we should mention this at some point, that males get osteoporosis too. And I think that is on the rise. So, I mean, our whole population is aging. And so I think men need to be really cognizant of this as well. You know, it's a lot of underweight endurance athletes, you know, in their master's categories that might be purposely restricting. I mean, that's concerning. So, and even if you're not an athlete, you're not immune to, unfortunately, to osteoporosis just based on gender.
Yeah, fantastic. And I want to thank you for your time and all that great information and tips that people can take with them. Now, you can follow Anne on Twitter at Guzman Nutrition, and you also check out her website at nutritionsolutionsanneguzman.com. I'll put these on the show notes as well as a link to her podcast. It's been great having you, and I've learned quite a bit.
Thanks so much for having me. No, I think I really appreciate it. You know, I'm still learning a lot about bone. I think the research world, I know we're still learning new things every day. There's so much more to learn. There's so much more research to be done. So yeah, definitely an interesting area. And it is important because it does and can impact the quality of your life. And, you know, if you don't pay attention now and then you end up in a high fracture risk, I mean, it really impacts how you move and how you live. And, you know, at the end of the day, you and I and everyone in the healthcare industry, we just want everyone to have the best quality in their years, not just years of life. And so anything we can do to get messages out there that promote any type of health, including bone health, is great. So thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, and take care.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for joining us this time on Feeling Healthy with Dr. Scott Lear. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss out on any future shows. Your support keeps this podcast going. And for more tips on healthy living, check out my website at drscottlear.com. Until next time, be healthy.